I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the Edwards Aquifer is the lifeblood for South Central Texas. It supplies drinking water for millions of people, keeps springs flowing, supports endangered species, makes farming possible from San Antonio to Uvalde. But after years of drought, aquifer levels remain under pressure. Recent rains helped, but they did not end the crisis. Pumping restrictions are still in place, and in the Uvalde area, farmers are facing some of the toughest cutbacks in the region. What does this mean for the future of agriculture, for cities, for the Hill Country and South Texas communities depending on the same water source? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Recent rains have gave the Edwards Aquifer a needed boost, but water managers and farmers say the region remains far from drought recovery. We are headed into May, which historically has been the wettest month of the year for the region. But for area farmers, this looks like a case of too little, too late to help them recover from years of drought and water cutbacks. Meanwhile, high growth development continues, including water-intensive data centers. We could be looking at the need for making some tough choices to protect our water and our future. We're joined by Roland Ruiz. He is the general manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, and also Steve Cargill. He's a Uvalde farmer. He's the owner of Cargo Produce and an Edwards Aquifer Authority board member. Roland and Steve, welcome to The Source. Great to have you here today.
Good to be here with
Thanks.
You.
Thanks.
And our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255. So, Roland, we got some rain.
Yes, we did.
We got some rain, a little bit of rain in the forecast also. So how has that changed what the aquifer looks like right now?
Well, I think to put it in proper context, you have to think about where we've been. So we've been in drought for the better part of 4 to 5 years. And coming into this rain event, we were at about a 70-inch deficit in rainfall as measured at the San Antonio airport. This last week helped us to the point where the index well in San Antonio came up 10 feet. But again, proper perspective, we were at a 40-foot deficit, so now we're just at a 30-foot deficit. So the rain helps, but if we're really going to see a change, we're going to have a series of these rain events, start to stack them, if you will, back to back to get us back to anything close to normal.
So when you say we were at a 40-foot deficit, that means historically at this time we would be 40 feet higher?
Yes, that's correct.
And how big of a drop is that compared to, you know, the health of the aquifer?
Well, we always have to correlate it not only to index well levels, but also to spring flow levels coming out at the Comal and San Marcos Springs. So those correlate. And so it's not so much aquifer health per se, but it's how well are the springs flowing? Because everything, of course, we're premised on being created to ensure that the aquifer is managed in a responsible way such that those springs keep flowing in compliance with federal protections for those endangered species. So you can't think of one without the other. And I tell people when you see us under these curtailments, these mandatory restrictions, it's not that the aquifer is going dry. It's that the concern is that the aquifer is going to lose enough water such that the springs go dry. So it's that balancing act. I think right now with this most recent rain event, in fact, we've been in stage four of that curtailment for the San Antonio pool for a good better part of a year. I think with this rain, we're going to be able to lift stage four and go back into stage three, which means going from a 40% reduction to a 35% reduction in pumping. So it's some relief, but it's not nearly the type of relief that I know our permit holders would like to see.
So San Antonio Pool right now, stage 4, that could go up. But in Uvalde, that's been at stage 5. Steve Cargill, that's where you till dirt over in Uvalde Pool, and you've been having to cut back your pumping. How much, and what does that mean for you?
We're at a 44% reduction right now, Dave. And I tell people all the time right now, this is like the perfect storm. We have a 44% reduction in our water usage. We have commodity prices that are the same as they were 30 years ago. We have rising input costs from fertilizers up 42% this year, in the last year, partly because of the war between Russia and Ukraine affected it. But now with the Hormuz Strait being closed, nothing's coming through. The inputs, like on a tractor, doubling over the last 20 years.
And what about labor?
Labor is it's tough. We have to depend on H2 labor now out of Mexico. That prevailing rate is right at $16 an hour. That's without the housing you have to provide. And like right now, we have a government shutdown, and so the hands that were supposed to come over for our onion harvest, the consulates are only staffed 50%, so we're not even getting those employees that we had counted on.
So it sounds like almost everything that would have been considered an advantage that made the winter garden such an ideal place to farm generation after generation, access to cheap, dependable, highly trained labor, water resources. We still got a good climate for you guys, I guess. You know,
we do.
But these are the things that made the winter garden enviable.
Yeah, I remember 30 years ago I was being asked by a packer, a produce publication about that, and they said, "What makes the winter garden a great place to be?" And I said those three things. I said we have abundant water, we have abundant labor, and we have great transportation because we had Laredo and Eagle Pass that all these trucks were coming to, the maquiladores. All three of those have changed. We don't have abundant water. Our labor's gone. And transportation, these trucks don't want to come to Texas anymore because these drivers are worried about getting pulled over. And
we've taken away the commercial driver's license from a lot of these folks.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, those three things that made it great, those are all gone. And then on the farmer side of it, we have an aging farmer population. I still think of myself as a young farmer, but I'm 67, and I probably can't name 5 farmers in Uvalde County under the age of 40. And so there's just a lot of farmers that are getting older, and they're saying, well, you know, what do I do from here out? The commodity prices are not there. I can't pencil out a profit. What do I do to make money? You know, maybe some of them turn to leasing what water rights they have. I don't know.
And leasing those water rights, who's picking up those leases?
You know, a lot of people, subdivisions are looking for water. Golf courses look for water. You think about all the golf courses here in
San Antonio. Data centers, are they coming in?
You know, data centers are something that are out there looking. I don't think really that we understand the whole idea behind the data centers yet. Are they going to be closed systems? Are they going to be open systems?
For water use.
For water use. Is that, you know, is that data center, say they start up with 30 acre feet of water. Well, if there's a subdivision on that same amount of land and there's 150 houses on a 175 acre subdivision, Over 10 years, that subdivision is going to use a lot more water than the data center. So.
All right, we're going to take a break here. I'm going to get the caller James on the air when we come back. 833-877-8255. 833-TPR-TALK. You get your water from a well. How's your well doing? Is it hanging in there? A lot of parts of around here are seeing their wells going not doing too good these days. We're talking about the Edwards Aquifer Authority. What are they looking at in terms of our water supply? And what does this mean for the drought and farmers and agriculture and the price for you as a consumer? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues right after this break. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the state of the aquifer, drought, what's going on with the drought, the impact on farmers and agriculture, and growth and competing demands that we have all around us. So what are the tough choices that we need to make sure that we're going to have water for the future? You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to James. And James, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yes, I was told by a member of the state legislature that about 20 years ago, the legislature did produce a report predicting exactly what's going on today, the shortage of water. And for 20 years, the state legislature, Democrats and Republicans, didn't do a damn thing about it. For whatever reason, you got to ask them. And I think that's outrageous. And I think that the state could go, the only way out of this drought at this point in time is desalinizing the Gulf water. And that's not a cheap job, but it's got to be done.
All right, James, thanks for calling in. And a lot of people are now actually looking at desal for the Gulf Coast. But I don't know if that water will make it over to here and if that water will be cheap enough to add to farmers. But Roland Ruiz, the general manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, we're looking at predictions now, today, that say the state of Texas doesn't have enough water into the future.
Yeah, and that's, I'm not sure which report your caller was referencing. I'm assuming it might have been a state water plan, which project out, but that water plan is updated every 5 years, and it's just a planning document. There's nothing linked to it that offers real solutions. One of the things I think that this water shortage that you're looking at, if there's a silver lining, is that people are making themselves open to some more creative solutions where they might not have considered them in the past. And here locally, in Medina County, for example, water purveyors in that county are getting together and are pooling their resources to explore the possibility of developing a regional aquifer storage and recovery system. And they're also looking at the potential of developing brackish water that's beneath their feet, but that needs to be treated to drinking water standards. So
that would be desal.
That would be
local desal,
but it would
not
be local.
Ocean desal.
Correct.
And there's a lot of interest in that, but there still opens up a whole other area of problems. Like, what do you do with the effluent that you discharge,
right,
and where does that go? And it can be highly toxic, a lot of arsenic and things in there.
Right. So there's every solution has a challenge linked to it. I would say it's not necessarily insurmountable. I'm speaking out of school here now, but you know, there's also demand, I think, in the oil and gas industry for some of this water potentially. So I think if you can start to look at ways that you can marry one industry's shortage with another industry's need across the state, you can maybe come up with some solutions.
All right, let's go to the caller. We have Michael, and Michael, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm interested in the agricultural side of it. How feasible would it be for producers to emphasize more drought-resistant type crops like sorghum or even things like millet? I'm imagining that could be used as livestock feed. And then also to practice things like cover crops that might retain some of the soil moisture, and how helpful could that be?
All right, Michael, thank you for the call. So Steve Cargill, he is a Uvalde farmer, changing the way we farm.
certainly those are good ideas. Any cover crop that you can put out, you know, helps you with savings of water, helps you with weeds for the next crop. But there's a cost in doing that. You know, you're still going over it, having to use a planter to plant it, that tractor. That expense has just been, it goes up and up and up as the fuel goes up. Fertilizer to put out on that crop to make it grow has, like we said earlier, has doubled. It's up 42% in the last year. So while those are great ideas, there's also a negative side. Like for the milo or millet, the biggest our biggest exporter was China for our grain sorghum. They're not, they hadn't taken any in the last year.
Tariffs.
Mm-hmm. Tariffs. And so I was always told that they use grain sorghum to make a whiskey over there, alcohol. It's very cheap, but that's why they bought the grain sorghum. And now they're sourcing it from Brazil, from other countries. They're not buying from the United States. So if you plant grain sorghum, there's a good chance that you're not even going to have a market for it. You won't even have an elevator to take it.
Another caller, let's go to Susie. And Susie, you're on the air.
Hi, y'all. I've been watching this going on for decades. And we're global warming is the main culprit here, and over use of the water by development from all sorts of growth, industrial and housing. But what I don't hear coming from Austin or in general is a real push to have comprehensive conservation programs and a conservation water development program for the state of Texas. I know we have the Texas Water Development Board, but that's really pretty limited. We are in a total crisis, and it's not going to get better. Global warming is not going to change. It's only going to continue down this destructive path. Our droughts are not going to get better. Our weather patterns of the extreme drought and then, bad storms, flooding, that cycle is not going to get better. It's going to get worse. So what is Texas mm-hmm. doing to look at a comprehensive plan to teach people that we don't need to be growing St. Augustine anymore? We don't need swimming pools. People don't need to be building stock tanks and having a pump on that stock tank to make sure that the flow doesn't decrease while indeed they're evaporating all the water to the air.
Okay.
The whole mindset about how we use water, how we evaporate water, how we haven't had leaky dams in some ways to encourage recharge. We've taken our surface areas and we've covered them with impervious cover. All that is going on at triple time.
All right.
Because of all this growth is going on and nothing is being done to create a comprehensive plan until the cows are already out of the barn.
Okay. Susie, thank you for the call. There's a lot there. Roland Ruiz, this, you know, you're the manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, and you can only speak for them, but having a statewide effort that is more attuned to we need to conserve water. We pretty much have a system where the market decides how much water is going to cost and where it's going to go. And this is where we ended up. And we saw what that's done to Corpus Christi.
Well, I think you need to parse out the Edwards region from the rest of the state, because the way water is regulated in the Edwards region, and when I say the Edwards region, it's the 8-county region from Uvalde to Hays County and all the counties in between. We have a true water market within the Edwards, and it was created as a result of the way the EAA was set up with the regulatory framework. You cannot export Edwards water out of our jurisdictional boundaries, so you have a confined market. You can't permit water above the statutory cap of 572,000 acre feet. So what we've seen happen is that groundwater, Edwards water, has been monetized as a commodity within the Edwards. And what that's enabled is for us to look at incentive programs to incentivize conservation. And we do that in some instances by outright paying permit holders not to use their water through some of our conservation programs at the height of significant droughts. That's kind of at the crux of our habitat conservation plan, is a mitigation measure against declining aquifer conditions. So the way we do it in the Edwards is not the way it's done around the state. And the reason for that is because of the unique factors that influence the way that our statute was developed.
It was a federal lawsuit.
It was a federal lawsuit.
Federal Judge Bruton.
Correct. So you don't see that replicated anywhere else in the state. So from that standpoint, I think we're fortunate within the Edwards region that we do have a regulatory framework that enables us to give the region some level of predictability, if not certainty, about what they can rely on from the Edwards. Now, because it's a known finite resource from a regulatory perspective, it's also incentivized creative solutions for alternative water supplies. And you've seen, for example, San Antonio Water System do just that. They've gone elsewhere, as controversial as it may have been, and they've imported water from other parts of the state. They've also developed aquifer storage and recovery project where they store their excess Edwards in another aquifer to use it during times like now when we're in drought.
And you also have a massive pipeline, Vista Ridge.
Right. So I think if you, to the caller's point, if you have the right regulatory framework in place, you can incentivize a lot of conservation-oriented programs and practices. But as of today, because in the state of Texas, groundwater is a private property right, it's difficult to overcome that and bring people together around that because it is a property right. So there has to be something in it for everyone,
right.
The best solution.
So Steve Cargill, as a farmer, I mean, farmers may think, who are these people to tell me not to pump as much as I want?
That there's no doubt about that. I can tell you from experience, I've only been on the board a little over a year, but when I came onto the board, I thought the Edwards Aquifer Authority was the great Satan, you know, telling us what to do and pushing us around. Since then, I've become more educated, and I realize that the role they play representing us with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, if they weren't in the position that they were in, each one of the pumpers would have to be dealing with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, which is something I don't think any of us want to do. And so they provide a lot for the preservation of the Edwards Aquifer. And while sometimes it's very uncomfortable, and you know, as Texans, we're very proud of our land, of what's under our land. As we discussed earlier, and that one caller kind of brought up, you know, it's treated differently in Texas. It's just more local water districts. We're unique here in these eight counties with the Edwards Aquifer Authority. But in the United States, it's not really regulated or even looked at on the federal level. Whereas in Mexico, they treat it as a natural resource and a
commodity.
As
a national resource.
The
federal government is
managing
it. The
federal government does. So when we go to fight them about what's, you know, what they haven't put back into the Rio Grande, we're fighting a federal government from local levels. It's pretty tough.
Right. But this whole idea that we have rule of capture in Texas, you should be able to pull as much water out of the ground as you want, but at the same time, we have to acknowledge the fact that your water is not just your water. You're also impacting your neighbor's water, and you can suck it all dry. And tomorrow, there won't be enough to go around. And you got to have a cop on the beat in order to make sure that we're able to manage this responsibly. Does that communicate?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think, you know, sometimes I think farmers are misinformed, you know, more coffee shop talk sometimes than what's actually going on. And I was pretty much that way. But I'm proud of what the Edwards Aquifer tries to do and the direction that they're leading everybody that's using water within the authority, within those eight counties.
All right, we're going to take another break here. Phone lines are open. You can call in with your questions and comments about the future of our water, the Edwards Aquifer Authority, how this is impacting the area of farmers. And we still got a lot of growth and development coming our way. Wahalote Ranch, for example, what does that mean? And we're not just talking about the abundance of water or the lack thereof, the scarcity, but the water quality as well. What kind of policy decisions need to happen? How are we going to come together as a community to protect our water and to make sure that we have food, reliable food sources? You know, farmers, they produce food. We need that. Also, I mean, we do need swimming pools. You know, I don't want to outlaw swimming pools, but let's get to a point where we don't have to outlaw swimming pools. 833-877-8255. Source continues after this. The Edwards Aquifer Authority, a lifeblood of South Central Texas, supplies drinking water for millions of people, keeps the springs flowing, supports endangered species, makes farming possible here in the area. But what happens if we don't manage this resource well? What is the future for our water, agriculture, for the cities, the hill country, in our development and our economy? Well, we've got to be talking about these things. We've got to be thinking about them proactively, sensibly, or else we may find ourselves looking pretty grim. I hate to point fingers, but we can look at Corpus Christi and see what bad planning looks like when it comes to water. So how do we avoid that? With us in the studio, Roland Ruiz, the general manager for the Edwards Aquifer Authority, Steve Cargill. He is a farmer out in Uvalde. He owns Cargill Produce, and he is also a board member of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, a voice for agriculture on that important body. And you can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we'll go to Bonnie. And Bonnie, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the call. My concern or my question is, what would be the need for, let's say, 6 or 7 new automated car washes between, you know, on Bandera, between just inside the loop 410 and then going out towards 1604. I mean, if we're talking about water conservation, why in the world would we need 6 or 7 brand new car washes?
Okay. Well, Bonnie, thank you for that. Now I know where I need to go. There's car washes everywhere. And so, Roland, is that a problem, car washes? I mean, they recirculate a lot of their water.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on car washes, but I as I understand the laws of economics, if they weren't popular, they wouldn't be developing them. They wouldn't be building them. So, but nonetheless, most of these car washes, I would presume, are within someone's local ordinance capacity, whether it be a city or otherwise. And I would say it's up to the local governing body, whatever it is, if that's a concern, that's where you address that with local ordinance making. But I'd also say this, I guess, on the other side of that, I would suspect that these commercial car washes are much more efficient in their water use than the old way I used to wash my car out in the front yard with a hose and do that, you know, on a recurring basis.
But it gets to the point that we don't have a water czar person who's going to decide who gets to have a car wash or no car washes or whatever. We have a market, and the market is going to decide these things, at least until you hit the point of a scarcity emergency where we don't have any water. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's the way we do things here in Texas. If you want to put a car wash in there, and there are some regulations, they don't just let anyone start a car wash. You got to go to the city. If it's in the city limits, it has to be permitted. There are certain things you do. They have regulations here in San Antonio to make sure that you don't waste water. And there are a lot of regulations at the Edwards Aquifer to make sure that you just don't waste water as well. You just can't pump water to pump water. You got to use it for a good purpose, right?
Correct. There has to be the term that's used in Texas groundwater law is beneficial use. It has to be put to beneficial use. You can't just waste it. So,
even if you put up a catfish farm.
Well, there you go. That's now you're going back in time, and that's the genesis of all this.
Is it Ronnie Puchek?
Ronnie Puchek, the catfish farm, infamous catfish farmer.
Yeah, so you can Google that. It is an amazing story that kind of helped us get to where we are today in terms of our way we perceive water locally. Let's go to Rocky. Rocky, you're on the air. Go ahead, Rocky.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was calling to learn what sort of initiatives can our city do to make our waterways more habitable, maybe not necessarily swim, but kayak and wade through them, where we can kind of gather around all of our water, all of our bodies of water as a economic and recreational resource for the community. I understand that the San Antonio River Authority does a lot of basura bashes and other things that increase awareness of our water systems. But I was curious to learn what do y'all do in coordination with the San Antonio River Authority to kind of increase our respect and really reverence for our life-giving resource of water here in the San Antonio area. I would love a future where our residents can, you know, enjoy our water systems a little bit more intimately. And I think that would draw a lot of visitors to the city and also make us some ripple effects to where how do we maybe conserve other resources in our community as well, not just water. But thank you. Take the comments off the air, and you guys have a great day. Appreciate it.
Well, Rocky, thank you for that great question, because not only are we talking about water as this practical and necessary resource, but also as a spiritual resource as well. And there's nothing like communing with water in a natural setting to help you, you know, connect with the universe. But Roland, what is your role with the Edwards Aquifer on that?
Well, we work closely with San Antonio River Authority and other river authorities across the region where our missions may intersect. Now, it's really San Antonio River Authority's responsibility to take care of the San Antonio River in that basin.
And the San Pedro Creek.
And I was going to say, that's one example where I think they've done a really good job of elevating the profile of the river and its usability. So that goes beyond our mission, per se. But if you look to the east, for example, in the Comal and the San Marcos Rivers, the waters there emanate from the Edwards. And so what we're doing in terms of trying to manage the resource to ensure those spring flows continue to flow, we're giving sustaining base flows to those two river streams. And those two communities, New Braunfels and San Marcos, are utterly dependent on the surface water coming through their cities for economic reasons and recreation and tourism and all those things, just like the city of San Antonio with its river. So I don't think anyone has cornered the market on responsibility for those sorts of things. I think we're all trying to do our best to work together to the same ends, ultimately preserving the resources so that everyone can continue to use them to the maximum benefit.
Another caller, Justin. Justin, you're on the air. Go ahead, Justin.
Just a couple of comments more than anything. Before there was Puchek, there was a guy named Williams out in Fort Stockton, Texas. And I was recently in Fort Stockton, and it's amazing to me. I mean, it's just a cautionary note. They pumped that spring complex dry, and that was Comanche Springs, and the farmers did it. So I appreciate the farmer that has stepped up on the program and has kind of had a conversion to come to see the light and the benefits of the Edwards Aquifer, how Edwards Aquifer is being regulated now. But my stronger point is the folks in power in Texas are Republicans, basically, and this is going to be a political solution ultimately. And they've been in power for over 20 years on just about every level of the upper level of state level of government. And it's going to take the business community and the Republicans and the Democrats sorting this out. And we've just got to get more political traction on this, would be my observation.
All right. Well, Justin, thank you for that. The Williams that he mentions is the Clayton Williams family. They were pumping and they were able to farm out there in West Texas. And, you know, Comanche Springs was no longer springing.
Right.
And so that was it's now held up as a cautionary tale for the state of Texas. And so I was wondering, you know, Steve Cargill, do you have any thoughts about that, about the responsibility?
You know, when I first came back and got into farming, we didn't have this to deal with. Edwards Aquifer was not even a thought. And so, yeah, we were able to pump all we wanted to. I don't think we ever were not aware of the of how precious it was and what water meant to our farming. But at the same time, we talk about how bad the farming economy is right now. Had we not been in the position to have a 44% reduction right now, we could double crop a lot more and say, well, we harvested this one crop, but we still have some fertilizer in the ground. We can come in and plant a fall crop or a winter crop and have the water to do that. But now that's not even an option because we can barely water one crop a year. And so it's tough.
So you have to limit your acreage, or how does that work out?
Definitely you have to limit your acreage. Growing up, we did both row crop and mainly produce is what we grow. Peppers, cabbage, onions.
This is stuff on your kitchen table.
Yeah, exactly. And so now we've gotten away from growing any row crops and concentrated just on our vegetables, because we also have a packing facility in Uvalde. And so it's become more important and made us be very selective in what and how we grow it.
And when they say 44% cutback, is that like over the course of a year, you calculate you're only allowed this amount of water, or is that going to be per month? How does that calculate?
It's per year. You're allowed so many acre feet, what you're permitted, and you can pump. You think going into a year you can pump all that, but then it slowly starts cutting back, and we're at 44% now, stage five. It's as bad as we can get. But because we only have half of our water, you can only plant half the crops you used to plant.
And when the rain comes, it's a good thing? You don't have to pump as much?
Obviously, most of the time it's a good thing. We were going to start harvesting onions last week. We've watered those. An onion crop takes 180 days to make. Right when it was time to harvest, we got the rain, and now we can't. So it can be good and bad.
All right, we're taking another break. We'll get some callers in. If you give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What do you think about how Texas is planning for a future that is going to be much drier? There is a super El Nino out there. We don't know what that's going to do. It could make us wetter, it could make us drier. But we do know climate change is real and is impacting things. We are running out of water. That is a certainty. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you've got a question or comment about the future of the water that we got to have here in Texas. We know that we don't have enough. That is the official version from the state of Texas. Not enough water into the future of the state, and we're going to have to spend about $200 billion to figure out a way to deal with that. Where's that money going to come from? And how will that fix the water situation? Give us a call, 833-877-8255 with your questions and comments. And let's go to Randall. Randall, you're on the air.
Car washes were brought up. And I believe one of your guests mentioned that local ordinances are helpful in bringing those things into line. That's true. But ordinances like that are only helpful and only come to fruition when you have elected municipal and county officials that are honest, civic-minded, and have genuine concern for the environment and their constituents. I'm in Medina County, just west of San Antonio. We have something like 5 data centers, at least, that are planned, some that are under construction. There may be more. Medina Lake, a hotspot for recreational boating and fishing during the 20th century, is now down to about 5% capacity. That means 95% empty. And I have watched over the past several years as one election cycle after another, the same county commissioners are rubber stamped back into office over and over again. It's the good old boy system. And I think 5 years from now, there is going to be a very, very cold and dry day of reckoning for Medina County.
All right. Randall, thank you for that. And so we'll hold you to that prediction. We'll see how that works out. Hopefully you're wrong. Roland Ruiz, I mean, is that, you know, it sounds like they're not doing the proper planning and future thinking.
Well, I think what you have to look at is what do these local governing bodies, or what can they do legally? And I got to tell you that elected county officials by law are limited in what can they do in terms of regulation and denying someone what can they do with their property, for example. And I know what he's speaking about in Medina County with these data centers. There's the opportunity there, kind of segueing to what we're talking about today, where a lot of these data centers are located on historically irrigated farms. And so what has happened there is that some family who owns that property has decided, what am I going to do for the next generation? Am I going to continue farming, or am I going to avail myself of this opportunity to divest myself and set up my family for the next generation? And so that's the rub there, right? That's Texas is a property rights state, and we respect property rights. So it's very hard then for local elected officials to infringe on that property right without subjecting themselves or their county or their elected body, whatever it may be, to potential takings litigation. And that's always a concern. When I say that, I speak from experience at the Edwards Aquifer Authority, where we have litigated that issue over many, many years in the, quote, takings of groundwater as a property right. And we've come to a good point now where that issue has largely been resolved within the Edwards. But that's always something for consideration out there. In a state like ours, where property rights rule, you have to respect that, and you have to work with that to get to the solutions you want.
So, what's to keep, or do they do this? Can data centers just do their own pump, put a pump in the ground, and draw their own water? They don't have to tap into a municipal water supply, right?
It depends on where they're located. You know, in Medina County, there's a number of rural water purveyors that have service areas, CCN, Certificates of Convenience, of Necessary Convenience, that by law they're obligated to provide water to their customers within their area. And what they can do is, by their own local ordinance-making provisions, impose extra requirements on folks who come into the area who want to use hook into their system. And I've seen this happen for
even if they're going to draw too much water for the system.
Well, you know, I think that it's up to them to define what too much water is. What can they sustain?
Overwhelm the system.
Yeah. What can they sustain? And then it becomes a negotiation process between the water purveyor and the data center, or any property, a subdivision, or a Walmart, or any industry that wants to come in. I know that in Medina County, there's a number of municipalities that for many years now have added into their local ordinance that any development that comes into their jurisdiction, or even their extraterrestrial territorial jurisdiction, a requirement that they bring enough water with them, meaning Edwards rights, to satisfy their needs so that the system is not overwhelmed.
Steve Cargill, what are you hearing from your fellow farmers?
You know, I think there's some questions, obviously, about the data centers. We don't have any in Uvalde County right now. Do I think some farmers that would not have ever considered that 20 or 30 years ago might be interested now? I certainly do. The way farming is, and no young people, and like we say, the generation that's farmed is getting older. So I think it's something that everybody in the Edwards is going to have to talk about. Do you want to supply your family with some generational wealth, or do you just want the farm to go under and nobody farm it? I don't know exactly what the answer is.
Yeah, people have got to figure that out on their own.
Right.
Let's go to Linda on the phones. And Linda, you're on the air. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
My question is, why don't we have rain catch systems on everything, on all new builds? I mean, you drive by, you see a Sam's Club or a Costco or an HEB or a Home Depot. They're huge, huge surfaces that could catch a lot of rain. I have rain catch. I have like 7,500-gallon rain catch. And it's full right now just from last week. And we're going to get more rain this week. We could. All new builds ought to have rain catch systems.
All right. Linda, thank you for that great question. So, Roland, requiring a rain catch system maybe on commercial property, but maybe on homes?
Yeah, I think that goes back to who has the legal authority to make such requirements. I know it's not the EAA. We don't have that statutory authority to regulate to that level of requirement. Now, we can incentivize those sorts of activities, and we've done somewhat similar things on a case-by-case basis, but again, you're talking about a broad, massive effort to convert people to rain catchment, and that almost always goes back to resting with the property owner and what they want to do with their property. Larger scale, I guess, like industry, that can be a negotiation process between them and the governing body, whichever it is that regulates that process.
And then, what do you do with the water that you catch? You know, I mean, where's how usable is that? But let me ask you really quick about this situation. I mentioned Corpus Christi; they're in a water emergency. The city council there basically sold off a lot of their water. Now they're running out of water. To the industries. Has this been a clarifying moment? Has it brought into more in focus that we've got to take water planning more seriously?
I think it has, absolutely, across the state. Now, we do have a state water planning process, and
but it doesn't really have any authority.
There's no authority there. It's kind of incentive-based, if you will. So when the state has, in its water infrastructure fund, money available for industry and other to avail themselves up. One of the pre-qualifiers for them to even compete for those dollars is that they have to have their project in the state water plan. So that's how it's been incentivized.
Right, but thinking about, we have so much growth still coming. We know there's not enough water in the state of Texas. We've got to figure things out. And if someone doesn't have the authority, maybe someone should have the authority to make sure that we don't put ourselves behind the eight ball.
Well, that is the question, and who should have that authority? But I will tell you this, that there's a lot of talk right now. We're in the interim between legislative sessions, and all indicators are that the next legislative session in Texas will be a water session. And when I say that, almost everything will be on the table, I think, for discussion.
Steve Cargill, we're wrapping up here. What are your closing thoughts? What do you want people to know about how things are going at your property, your farm, and water planning?
Obviously the ag deal is tough right now. On the newscast we were hearing a while ago, you know, there's the New World screwworm. So all the ranchers along the border are terrified. We have our water situation, 44% reduction. We have low commodity prices. We have a lack of labor. It's the ag picture in South Texas from here all the way to the Rio Grande Valley is dismal right now.
And this is the food basket for the country.
Yes.
So what does that look like for consumers when you're not able to produce?
Well, it's scary. You think about all the produce that we get from Mexico. What happens if we start depending on that even more heavily than we do now? And at some point they say the cartels cut it off.
Hmm.
It's you know, that's when it gets serious. Water's one thing, but food's a completely different
thing. They're not inseparable.
No.
And so we need to be thinking about that. Steve Cargill, a Uvalde farmer, owner of Cargill Produce, and Edwards Aquifer Authority board member, and Roland Ruiz, general manager for the Edwards Aquifer Authority. Thank you so much for coming in today and helping us get a better idea of what's going out there with water in the aquifer. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.